Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamma. Today is Tuesday, October 25th, 2016. With me today, Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
Splendid, man.
Awesome. Glad to hear it. And Dave Hamilton, how are you?
Outstanding. Thanks for having me.
Man, that's just killer. I love it when everyone's doing well. And clearly, you guys are both doing better than well. Bigly well, even.
Splendid and outstanding, even.
Indeed. Hey, you know, Brian, you have a couple gripes about iMessage, don't you?
Yeah, a couple of relatively minor gripes. As a matter of fact, a friend actually pointed out both of these things. There's two things. First of all, if you have a group chat in particular, but this would actually be good for any chat, but in group chats in particular, when you open it, it goes to the very newest, most recent posts in the group chat instead of going to where you left off, leaving you to scroll up until you can find where you left off and then catching up. And you know, I've used things like Slack. I've used the Line app where that's not how it's handled, where it actually leaves you, takes you right back to the last place you had open the next time you open a particular chat. And this seems like a pretty basic thing that iMessage should do.
You would
say. Yeah, I agree. I can see where the evolution of the platform hasn't yet led us there. So, I mean, I agree with you, Brian. It's minor gripes, right? But like more like wish list stuff. But as soon as you mentioned it to me, I thought, oh, yeah, I want that too. Because we have that in other chat platforms like Slack. And I think you said Vine does it and Line. That kind of thing. Line. Sorry. Thank you. Yeah. Vine is for videos. I knew that. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, the good news is that the platform has all the data that's needed to do this. This is totally a UI request, right? But
right.
Once you think about it, yeah, of course you want it. That would be great.
And yeah. Another thing too is that if you are scrolled up in a chat, what happens currently is reading older messages, right? Any new messages posted while you're scrolled up yanks you right back down to the bottom. And again, the data's there. Apple knows that I'm scrolled up.
Right.
So Apple should probably let my window stay where I put it and just give me some kind of a notification that, yes, there are new posts that are coming in. Like, again, yeah, this is something that Line does well. Yeah, Line and Slack both actually tell you. And you know, for all I know, other, you know, WhatsApp and...
I was just about to ask if you know if WhatsApp does that.
I don't know if WhatsApp does that. I've used it a little bit, especially when we were in Europe. I used it a ton, but not enough that... I don't remember. Yeah. So
the interesting thing is that I really had never thought about these things until iMessage rolled out in Sierra and iOS 10, and Apple has added all of these really great new features, the stickers, the apps, the fact that you can take a photograph without it being saved to your camera roll. The drawing, the effects, the digital touch stuff, the screen effects, all of these things are really cool. iMessage has become a bona fide messaging platform. It can go toe-to-toe with a lot of these other social network-oriented services that have been around for the last few years. And now that I've sort of seen the light, I want Apple to take me to the promised land. Give me all the little things.
And that's impressive. I mean, I know we're all Apple focused here, right? But mm-hmm. iMessage is a platform dependent messaging platform, right? A device type dependent messaging platform. You can only use it if you're using Apple devices. Mm-hmm. And yet it's still this like really compelling, powerful platform, and is a thing that's keeping people or even bringing people to Apple's devices, to the iPhone, even to the Mac. So I saw John Gruber's post about this, and it's something that I was aware of, but never really kind of stopped to think about until I saw his post, that iMessage is the only multi-device end-to-end encryption platform, messaging platform that exists. Huh. Right, so it's end-to-end, but it's multi-end to multi-end encrypted, right? So all of my devices can see every message I send, and all of your devices can see every message that I send, but they're all encrypted end-to-end.
Right.
Right. I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah, I remember thinking of it in passing a couple of months ago when we were talking about iMessage, probably because of the FBI and all of that stuff. But yeah, nobody else is doing that. Like Facebook doesn't do that, and that's painfully obvious. But it's, yeah, nobody else is. Not that it's impossible. Obviously, Apple's doing it. You just need to, you have to have a centralized server that stores all the public keys in order to do that the right way.
You know, it's right. interesting how Apple has or seems to be failing at giving us reliable services for many other aspects of what we do all the time with our iOS devices, but they have nailed encryption in messages.
Yeah, we give Apple. Go ahead, Brian.
No, actually, go ahead with your point.
All right. We give Apple a hard time about their failure at many of their cloud services. Really, where they fail horribly in the cloud is syncing of what I'll call non-specific data types, right? But messages, awesome in the cloud, right? Calendar, awesome in the cloud.
And messages contacts, has been awesome for a long time.
But it's always calendar, so is contacts, right? I mean, those sync really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Photos with iCloud photo library works well in the cloud. The photo stream was sort of a mess, and I'm actually not sure why. Apple Music actually seems to be just fine. I mean, I know some people have found weird things with it, but by and large, I'm not hearing about people that are having problems syncing. Where Apple's cloud falls apart is iCloud Drive. And it's syncing not just your documents. That's actually fairly straightforward, but all the preferences and that sort of thing is where it really kind of fails in my experience. Also just the limited storage, but that's sort of a different thing. That's an easily solved point of failure, but they don't seem to want to solve it
ever,
at least not yet. Right. Well, I mean, maybe, yeah, never say never, but yeah, but wait, Apple's pretty good at again, specific data types in the cloud, predictable data types in the cloud. Apple's very good at that. It's the non-specific stuff where it really falls apart when they try to do it for third parties and that kind of thing. It's often awful. Dropbox beats them there.
Well, my point on iMessage having been good for a while is that it's not like these new features that Apple rolled out with Sierra and iOS 10. And although it does annoy me that not all of the features in iOS 10 are in Sierra for messages, but you know, right. I'm assuming they'll come with the next version. But those new features weren't some kind of fix. It's like, you know, now finally iMessage is usable. Instead, Apple has actually broadened iMessage's appeal beyond a mere texting app.
Yes, that's true.
And yep. And that actually is quite impressive. And they didn't wreck it in the process.
No.
That in and of itself is impressive.
I give Apple a lot of credit for the vision on that. Mm-hmm. Because there was no reason. I mean, when I first heard of iMessage, I thought, okay, well, this is a way for people in countries where they're not getting free unlimited text messages to leverage their unlimited data to do that. And I suppose that country was here in the U.S. at the time.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now that I think back, it felt like that was what the answer, that's what iMessage was doing. And who knows, maybe it was, but I feel like there was more vision than just solving the problem that we know of today, kind of part of it.
And
just because of the way the platform was built.
This completely upended the carrier. I mean, the carriers had us, here in the U.S. in particular, had us, you know, in this death grip for SMS text messaging.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Right.
We paid through the nose.
And we were all paying through the nose. And not so in other countries, actually. Text messaging was very reasonable certainly in Europe.
The country
and in Japan.
I alluded to was ours. That's right. Yeah.
But Apple just completely upended all of that and like completely rewrote the rule. I mean, the carriers have to hate Apple for that. And I thank Apple for that.
Yeah.
I had another point. I don't know what it was.
Well, my point now is, thanks, Brian. I didn't realize these things were bothering me until you pointed them out.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, we're both in a very, very chatty group.
Oh, howdy.
And, you know, there is no way. I mean, like, I don't even try to catch up most of the time because it's actually just kind of too much of a hassle. But I would catch up if it would open up to where I left off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I hadn't really thought about that, but Brian, I am not catching up either. I pick up wherever we are, mm-hmm. unless whatever I read, I can't get the context, and then I scroll back a little bit to find the context.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, now that that you've laid out your iMessage and Messages user interface manifesto, Apple can hop to it.
Yes, please. Thanks, Apple.
Yes. So, Brian, there's another thing that this is kind of like the Brian show today.
Oh,
I know. And with Dave, a special guest.
I'm leaving.
It's been great having you here today. Anyhow, Brian, you found a little bit of history that is timely because the original iPod is 15 years old now, but also kind of cool because music. So what was that?
Well, credit where credit's due. John Gruber found it, and I nerded it from there. I need to add a little attribution there. Sausage. So here's the deal. First iPod. Mm-hmm. Steve Jobs and the iPod team were, you know, they had this new product and this new thing they were doing, and they sent that first iPod to journalists. This is one of the rare occasions where Apple was proactive in sending stuff out to people. And it came preloaded with music. And what Steve, and this, of course, was, you know, a very carefully curated list because, you know, hashtag Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did, though, because the record industry, the recording industry, was just, you know, convinced that Apple was out to get everybody to pirate so that they could make profits from the hardware, and to show that to show the recording industry that Apple was an ally here and not the enemy, they bundled the 20 CDs of the music that had been preloaded onto these iPods. And they sent that along with the iPod to the recipients.
That's pretty cool.
I remember it now, but I just completely, it's just, you know, it was one of those little anecdotes that had completely escaped my memory until I read an account by, I got to get this guy's name right, Nobuyuki Hayashi, who recently found his bundle of 20 CDs still unopened. And he wrote about it, reminding us about what had happened, and then actually laid out the 20 CDs that are that were included. And it's just one of those interesting, you know, bits of lore that definitely found interesting.
You know, I hadn't thought about the CDs, well, for years, because I'd completely forgot about them. Seeing the list of the discs that they included, that's a pretty nice little music library starter right there.
Yeah, it's pretty. Did Dave actually? By the way, did he carry through with his thread? Did he leave?
Say that again. No, Dave's still here. Yeah,
okay, yeah. All right. Dave's not here. It's a pretty broad cross section. You've got the classic rock. You've got two Beatles albums. The only band that got two listings. You've got some jazz. You've got some classical music. You had Nirvana. It's got your grunge covered. Mm-hmm. Little country with some Faith Hill. Oh, Brother, Where Out There, Where Art Thou, which is one of my favorite soundtracks. Moby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was surprised Dylan. At how many of the albums in that collection I already own.
Mm, sure.
Yeah.
You know what we should do?
And I will note.
Oh, go ahead, Dave.
Yes. Okay. I will note that it includes one of the jazz albums is Dave Brubeck's Time Out album, which is a
killer album.
Well, it's a killer album, but the way it was recorded has resulted in it often being the test album of choice for any new compression standard. It's just got so much air in the recording that it really highlights when you've got a crappy compression codec, or you know, not using enough bits if you're compressing it too much or whatever. That is one of the few albums where I can actually hear the difference between the lossless version and the iTunes match version, and I had to learn how to do it. And there's certain spots of Kathy's Waltz where I can hear it, but it's possible on that album. So I find it interesting that that one, of all the albums that could have been chosen, that one was included. It just, and I don't think anybody talks. I think I'm the only one that talks about it as being the album to test things with, but yet everyone seems to choose it. So which is interesting.
Yeah.
You know what we should do, and this is Dave's idea, and I'm just going to present it like I just came up with it. You know what we should do is we should put together a playlist and publish it to TMO. What do you think?
That's a great idea.
I think that's a great idea. Glad I thought of it.
And I'm going to go ahead and take the credit for that, even though actually it was Jeff that suggested it earlier.
Was it really?
Yep. It really was.
No, Dave, nice it's okay. Job, you can take the credit. It's fine.
Yep. Yep.
You know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
No. It's fine, Brad. Brian. That was nicely passive aggressive of me.
Brianna Caulfield. That's my erotica author name.
I've read your stuff.
No, you haven't.
No, I haven't. Not yet, anyhow.
All right, deep dark rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Did you had a PSA for us, didn't you?
Yes, I did, and that was the single best transition you've ever done. I'm very proud of you. So my PSA, I have complained a bit about not being able to set up two-factor authentication on my iCloud account, and it's a known issue that Apple has been looking at. Well, they have fixed it. So if you're one of the people that has tried to set up two-factor authentication on your iCloud account and it has not worked, try again. It probably works now. And
no. You say Apple has fixed it. Apple, uh-huh. You were able to do it. Did you find documentation where Apple was saying, hey, we fix this?
This isn't documented anywhere. The problem isn't even documented.
I see.
So, no, well, there's no documentation.
It was documented on TMO.
There's no official Apple documentation, but there's official TMO documentation.
Mostly pedantic.
Mostly. But the point is that, Brian, it's all about me. And Apple has fixed the problem, which means that now I've been able to turn on two-factor authentication for my iCloud account, which means that I can remotely access my HomeKit devices again. Because once you're on iOS 10 and tvOS 10, you have to have two-factor authentication enabled for remote HomeKit access. So now HomeKit is a little more useful to me again.
Sweet.
Yeah. So give it a shot. If it didn't work for you, it probably does now. And hey, now we are out of time. Brian, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having us, man.
And Dave, thank you for being here as well.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
And listeners, thank you for joining us. Don't forget that today is Apple's earnings report day, so be sure and tune in to Mac Observer this afternoon for all of our coverage and analysis of the event. And we'll see everyone again tomorrow.